Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Neighborhood Church. My name is Rebecca Rick, and I am the associate pastor here. I feel like I'm surrounded by all of these things. I kind of like it. It's like a little fortress. I feel safe. It's good. I put my hat here because today is Groundhog's Day. It's one of my favorite days of the whole entire American calendar. Does anyone know? Did Punxsutawney Phil see his shadow or not? Somebody Google it right now. I don't care. We're not... What? Oh, I know it happened. It's Groundhog's Day. Of course it happened. Do we know? Do we have more snow? Winter? Somebody... Find it out and shout it out. It's my favorite day. Here's why I love it, as a side note to my discussion today. I love it because so many of our holidays in America are situated around religion and nationalism, patriotism. And Groundhog's Day is neither one of those. I love it, and it allows grown men six more weeks of, okay. That's okay. That's good. We've needed the snow. We've needed the winter, right? We haven't had any. Awesome. We are grateful for that. I love Groundhog's Day because literally it is a holiday where grown men who have been situated in boxes their entire lives put on top hats and tails, and then go to the hole of a small animal that normally they'd be chasing off their property with a shotgun, and they lift them up to their ear and pretend to have a conversation with them. Oh, really? And then they read from old-timey scrolls. Oh, my gosh. I just love it. It's a ritual based in play, and no one takes it seriously, but it's brings joy. And so I hope that in our discussion about ritual this month, you are thinking about what brings you joy in your life. I really do. Whether it's lighting a special candle, whether it's a special handshake with a grandkid, right? The way that your voice goes up when you're talking to your animal, whatever, I am hoping that you are cognizant of all these little things that you are doing in your life because, man, those are holy things. And I love that. I think that's great. So, today, I would like to talk about something that feels for me the ritual of confession. With that, let me read what I wrote down before church. I said, whether it is in a church or on a bathroom stall with a sacred Sharpie marker, whether it is over our third drink or our second box of Kleenex, we have all experienced confession. And we are gathered here today to celebrate the uncomfortable release that comes from the gift of confession. And with that, I'd like to open us up with a little prayer. Heavenly Father, there are so many things around us that teach us how to live a good and beautiful life. We are reminded of the verse that says, O people, the Lord has told you what is good, and this is what he requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. As much as we try to do that, sometimes, it does not work out. But man, when it does, we create your heaven on earth. Thank you for being with us today and reminding us of that place, of that power. Amen. So, I am in the process of decluttering my house. And my children will tell you that I'm not good at it, is what they would tell you. I would tell you that it is a skill that I am learning, and I am becoming better at it. And so this whole week thinking, well, not this whole week, it's the whole month, really, goodness gracious, but I've been thinking about the things in my life that are around me. Physically, yes, the things I do in my day, the things that clutter up my time, the things that clutter up my house. And I thought a lot about my bookshelf. My bookshelf is full, and books are stacked this way and then also on top when they are short enough to have books stacked on top. It drives my children crazy. And for me, as a child who read a lot growing up, they were a place of escape, probably. And so for when I sit down in front of my bookcase, I see potential, wisdom that I haven't yet learned from, right? I see storylines and characters that would probably take me to new versions of me that I would never be had I not have read that book. We've all read a book that has changed our life. We're in church. We'd like to say, oh, it's the Bible. Yes, sure, but there's other books that have changed our lives. Absolutely. And so for me, looking at my bookshelf, I go, it's hard for me to get rid of any of these. Because for me, it feels like I'm locking myself out of versions of me that I'll never become if I don't read this book. That is a lot of weight to put on a person, because I'll tell you right now, there's so many books on my bookshelf that will never get read. I am a book collector of sorts. Let's just be honest. I love to have the idea of this book on my shelf. Will I get to it? Maybe. If I don't, well. Marie Kondo, who is like, was the decluttering queen until she had children. Take note, people. Take note. She says that if you get through a book and you just get to a point where you're stuck in it, take grace with yourself and understand the wisdom that book was supposed to teach you has already been learned by you. You already got to the part of the book that you were supposed to get to. I think sometimes when I look at my bookshelf, I have a harder time with dealing with the emotional ties I have to things. The books that I remember reading to my kids, they don't want to read those books anymore, but I remember it. And honestly, I don't want them to feel like they have to have grandkids for me to like pass the books on to, right? I don't want that. But there's ties there. And so for me, when I'm thinking about my bookshelf, I'm thinking also about all the people I was at those moments. I'm thinking of the woman I was, the things I believed. Chris, when you would opened today, you talked about the sin of not speaking of some sort. This is a book, Christian Mystics, 365 Readings and Meditations, a really good one if you're looking for a daily morning ritual. A quote from Bonhoeffer. We have learned a bit too late in the day that action springs not from the thought, but from a readiness for responsibility. Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. He goes on to say, there's a piece underneath it that says, like Martin Luther King Jr., he notes that good intention, understanding, and sympathy becomes meaningless without expression in deed. We can write papers and books and footnotes until we die and not change anything. The sins of omission can be very grave because, again, not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act. and I have wisdom like this on my bookshelf. But sometimes I can't get to it because I've got other things in my life distracting me, filling up my time, filling up my space, filling up my heart. This book here, Five Plays of Shakespeare, came to me in a unique situation. In high school, I played the part of Lady Macbeth. Not in the play Macbeth, because that would have been much too highbrow for the high school I went to of all of 25 people in my grade. But it was a play about auditioning for a play. And all of the people who tried out for this play were horrendous for all different reasons. And I played Lady Macbeth. And so if you're not familiar with the play, I'm not sure why not, but we can have a talk afterwards. It'll be fine. But in Act 5, Scene 1, Lady Macbeth, who is has committed the sin of murder, wakes up and is sleepwalking, and there's a conversation of two people who are spying on her in the hallway, and her famous line is, do you know it? Anyone? Oh. Ah, Kathy's got it. Where's the beef? Who is this? No. Kathy knows it. She yells out, out, damned spot. Out, I say. And she is raking her hands so they're almost raw, trying to rub away the guilt, the blood she imagines still on her hand. And the doctor, one of the people who is watching her, says to the servant next to him, she doesn't need a physician. What she needs is the divine. I stole this book. This was sitting on an English teacher's shelf in high school. I knew no one was going to want it. I knew I wanted it. I knew I wanted it. I knew no one else in that small town was going to read this book. And so in homeroom, the only class I had with this teacher, I took it and I kept it and I kept it for 2 years until my very dogmatic church brought me to an event that is actually now, it was run by what is now actually labeled a cult by some people. They made us call people that we had wronged, including people that we had been in abusive relationships with. There were people talking about how they had gone to Target and said, you know, I stole this banana or I stole this outfit, right? And so with guilt on me, I went to that teacher and I said, I have to tell you something. I love this book and I'm so sorry I took it without asking. He had grace. He totally understood. He knew. He probably didn't even know that book was gone. But he reached out in love and said, well, it sounds like you would love to keep it, wouldn't you? I can't get rid of that book. Can't get rid of that book at all. You understand? You get it. I can't get rid of that. Sarah, can I have you help me with something? I have two things to hand out to you today. Oh, I actually need one of those too because I haven't memorized that. Thank you. Today we are talking about confession, and it's really easy for us to talk about, and we've all had experience with the confession of sin. But what we also understand in the Christian church is that's deeply tied to the confession of faith. I believe I'll have enough, but if not, couple up with the person next to you. There was a time in my life when I was very much deconstructing my faith and didn't want anything to do with feeling guilty about anything I did or did not do. Because I was still trying to figure out what I believed. And then I went to synagogue for high holidays, and I was moved by this confession. This confession was said by parents lovingly with their children, eye to eye, heart to heart. I'd like us to read them. If you want to read it together with me, we can. I think there's power in that. If not, I just ask that you'd listen to your heart. We have trespassed on our beloved's privacy and independence by hovering. We have done improper things and have convinced ourselves that our actions were in our children's best interests. We have robbed our family by not giving them our full attention when they are with us. Sorry, I'm going to start it differently. We have spoken slanderous of others and have done it in front of our children. We have hurt others in anger. We have associated ourselves with people who are poor role models. We have given those who trust us bad advice. We have lied, whether for a good reason or not. We have used profane language in front of our children and got frustrated with our children for copying this behavior. We have yelled at our children for being disobedient and disrespectful while being disobedient and disrespectful. We have been stubborn with those we love when we should have been flexible. We have acted as though the rules do not apply to us. We have worshipped the idols of materialism and consumerism and have taught our children and community to do the same. We have gone astray. We have neglected our inner child who longs to just be understood. We are ourselves children, still learning. Forgive us. This was on my bookshelf. It is something I've collected. In my heart, there are other things I've collected on the bookshelf of my heart. An angry God that is going to condemn me forever for whatever, for swearing, for falling in love with someone, for not following rules I don't understand. And that book, that teaching, sits right next to the teaching that told me that God, the divine, is someone who loves me unconditionally. One of those books cannot say on my bookshelf. Decluttering the bookshelf of my heart, of my mind, of what I've been taught is tough. I'm not very good at it yet. It is something I am still learning. It's hard for me in part because it makes me sit with, well, what do I keep? Why do I keep it? Who told me I should keep this? When we hear from Micah, right, that we are to do right and to love mercy and walk humbly with the Lord, what does that mean? An everyday practice. That's hard. And so we return to the shores of Jordan. At the beginning of this month, I talked about being at the river and wrestling with God, about Jacob being there. Jacob had sent all of his belongings across the river and stayed back, and in the silence and the simplicity of just that moment, he was able to rake through himself and wrestle with God. We do that. We do that here. We do it in our private lives. If you're not doing it, I suggest that you try, right? That we turn inward, that we become more and more aware of the places and people and goodness and the divine that are surrounding all of us. And we all have teachings. We all have life experiences that we've put on this bookshelf. And we keep, and I ask that we go back to that. Figure out the things that we are keeping, things that we need to let go of. I started this month off by showing you a ritual that I do in the morning. And when I used to sing that song, I sang it in with a crowd of the church. And so as we started the month, I'd like to end this month with that similar song. So I'd ask Kristen and Eric to come back up. They're going to sing a song for us, the song that I started the month with, about our prayers rising up to the Lord. I ask that our prayer today would be a prayer of help, perhaps, a prayer of guidance, a prayer for strength, as we, in this very complicated world around us, have the courage to look at what we believe, wrestle with God, go through the things that we surround ourselves with, and find the things that give us joy. And then I'd like for us to read a creed, because as much as there's a confession of sin, there is a confession of faith to figure out the things that we believe, the things that we strive for. And there's wisdom and roots and tradition in that and blessing. So let us first let our prayers and voices rise up to the Lord. And together, with a we read together a statement of faith. I believe in God, the mysterious energy of creation, which is all around us and in us. We get glimpses of God in the universe, which is our home, and the universe which expands beyond our imagination. We see God revealed in the earth as it nourishes us while renewing itself. We see God in the miracle of life as it comes into existence, produces offspring, and dies. We experienced God in the human family, and especially in Jesus of Nazareth. His life was so unique that in Jesus we see God's nature revealed as a model for our lives. Jesus was not bound by the human barriers his contemporaries had set, but accepted the outcasts and extended his welcome to everyone. He advocated peace by demanding justice for all. Jesus was admired by his followers, killed by the oppressors of society, and yet he continues to be present with those whom open their hearts to him. In the midst of the distractions of human activity, God's Spirit calls followers of Jesus into communities and unites them in one timeless universal church. The Spirit reminds us that God is present in our lives and in everything that exists. God cares for creation and for us. God's human likeness, sustained by his love, we are called to reflect God in our lives. In talking about statements of faith and confessing of sin, you may have some big feelings. And that's okay. That is okay. We celebrate the uncomfortable release, the pivots that we have in our life, the call to grow deeper in our roots, to make our table wider, to welcome all. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Please come back at 6 for all of the marshmallows you could ever imagine. If you want to bring your own marshmallow sticks, guess what? You are entitled to do all of that. Have an amazing, blessed Sunday. Go with peace. Know that you are loved. And be that love to a world that frickin' needs it bad. Have an amazing day.